Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Happy Saturday to you guys. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast, and I don't know what time it is in the rest of the world, but if you're tuning in, we're happy to have you joining the ride with us on this beautiful Saturday here in Atlanta. Today's date is the 3rd. Yeah, the 3rd of the month. This year is flying by so fast. But it's funny that the bullshit that's happening this year is going to follow into the next year, as we well know. I'm going to open up the microphones to my co-host. By the way, we do have some great topics. We didn't get to a whole lot last week that we did have in our itinerary because we were giving, the Saturday, that we were honoring Miss Tina Turner, and the honors continue. If you're checking out social media, there's people all around the world that are still giving their condolences and remembering the queen. Remember, she was the queen of rock and roll. So it's something that you just don't give honor in one day. It takes a little bit of time for people to get through mourning, it's like Michael Jackson and Prince and everything. Some people mourn for months, because to be honest, I really miss those artists. Of course we do. Many of us that grew up listening to their music and actually followed their lives. And Tina was one of the few that actually lived to see their story be showed and shared on the big screen. So it takes a moment, but we have some topics, some stories, some local stories I want to share here regarding social media. And, you know, when you look at things that happen and people share on social media, and then you find out that you probably don't know them, but you find out where they've been killed, they've been murdered, and they have a following of 5,000, 6,000 people, that type of stuff. And it's like, wow, what's going on? We're going to get into that story, and I'm going to share exactly what I'm talking about. But in the second hour, we have a very special guest that's going to join us. This gentleman has been in the music industry for over 50 years as an executive in the music industry. I'm fortunate to have him on because thanks to a friend of ours that's been here on the show before, he turned me on and said, hey, look, you might want to talk to this cat here. And so without further ado, let me open up some microphones here. I see that my co-hosts are here on the board. I have to open up the chat room so people in the chat room can tune in. But first and foremost, the lady who's been here with TMGS from the beginning and beyond, the one, the only, Miss Janet Pollock Hawkins. Dave. Happy Saturday.
Well, hello. Hey, happy Saturday to you, Michael. How's it going?
Well, it's going, you know, I just talked to you about maybe, what, 15 minutes ago?
You're not supposed to say that.
I know, but, you know, I try to make it fun and funny at times, you know, because we always, you know, always do this. We always try to prepare for the show and, you know, you do your thing, you know, and as I always say, you know, I'm so appreciative of Janet because she's always been there, always, you know, we have our moments, but she always, you know, does the research and we come to a meeting of the minds of what to do as far as topics and everything on the show. And I'm so thankful, to be honest, for as long as we've been doing this, you know, together we're going into what, 8 years now, when you add up all the shows, not just TMGS, but when you add up, you know, prior to being on the J. King Network, you know, at Michael Mack Live, had the Cool Critics, then the Michael Gay Show on the J. King Network, now the Michael Gay Show independently. You know, we've been riding this horse for a while. So I'm just so thankful, and all the people who have been involved in this over the years, still chime in, still tune in, all the great special guests that we've had. I mean, it's been a great ride, and I'm just so thankful, and I just enjoy talking to everybody and getting these great individuals on every Saturday. It's just amazing. Wouldn't you agree? Well, she's going to get quiet on me now. Janet, are you there? Okay, I don't hear.
I'm on mute. Oh, my gosh, I'm talking and I'm on mute. I'm thankful for you too, Michael.
I don't remember
half the stuff I just said, but, yes, I'm very thankful of you too, and it has been a long ride. You know, said we have moments. I started to say, what moments, Michael? But you know what those moments are.
Yes, you know them as well as I do, you know, because, I mean, you know, I, again, you know, what people don't understand is that where, you know, other shows do what they do. We do what we do. We're a little bit different, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't try to compare us with anybody else. I've never looked at it like that. I've always said this is going to be a variety show. I found it interesting. I don't want to call out any names and everything because then, you know, that's when the attackers and the haters come. But I listen to what folks say. There's some folks who are on some of the same networks and this and the other that have different types of shows. You know, there's some shows that, you know, love to cuss each other out, love to have banter and disagreements, and that's entertainment to some people. But I'm a little bit older, and I'm like, I'm not going to come in here on Saturday and have folks cuss me out. No. That's not what it's
and
all
I'm
about.
And I'm older.
And you're older than me, right. And the thing is that where, you know, I mean, and some folks love that. And if that's your cup of tea, fine. Drink it up. But that's not me. And I'm not going to, you know, I do listen. you know, to certain shows, and not just, and I want to make this very clear, not just the shows that I was affiliated with and everything. I listen to other folks. Tim Black, I listen to him. I listen to many other shows on Blog Talk Radio that they pretty much have some of them now, not all of them, pretty much have the same type of format of where there's a lot of, you know, debating. And here we debate, but disrespectful or calling names, I feel like that's not necessary. You're going to have a conversation, fine. You're going to agree or disagree, fine. But calling people out of their names and at my age, and of course, at your age, I'm not going to, you know, tolerate someone call me a son of a bitch. You don't know my mom. You never knew her. And a bitch is a dog. And I think you're going up beyond the line. I made that very clear to somebody, you know. You might look at it as entertainment, but I look at it as being very disrespectful. And I'm not going to tolerate it, you know, on this show. And as I always said, you can cuss. You're welcome to cuss when it's about the topic. But you will not be allowed to cuss another person on this show. That is not allowed. You're not going to disrespect someone else because you disagree with them at all.
Yeah, I feel a person can get their point across without doing a lot of swearing. And we're the type of show we do, and we analyze and we break down the topics of breaking news, things that are happening, you know, around the world and within the United States. You know, try to make it, you know, shake it up a little bit. Sometimes we have entertainers on, artists, you know, R&B, jazz. We have a variety of different people. You know, sometimes it might be a lawyer or a doctor.
We have police. We've had doctors, police officers, lawyers. We've had a lot of guests. In fact, one person said on another show said that, you know, the Michael Gay Show has a lot of great different guests. And that's what we do, you know, and I'm thankful and I'm blessed and honored. We have comedians. We have directors. We have people that are on, you know, on a different platform and educate us. And the main thing, my whole goal is to get into their minds and understand what got them at that point. What does it take to get to that point, in hopes that someone who is considering that type of field, you know what I mean, you know, have questions about things, we get the best of the best. We get legends. We get icons. We get the best of the best.
We really have had
and still continue to get the best of the best. People, you cannot tell them they're not the best of the best because they're still doing what they're doing. Still doing it. You know, so with that being said, by the way, the theme song that I play every Saturday is called a conversation piece, How I Remember. And it was written by Mr. Joe Foxers, former musician and lead vocalist for the group called Ozone on the Motown record label. Our guest worked for Motown, so this should be interesting. But Joe, you know, it was a while. Joe had stepped out of the music scene for a while, and I finally caught up with him. He was a guest on our show, looking forward to him coming back. And he said, hey, man, I got this instrumental. You might be interested in having it. I've never released it and everything. And look at it. Here it is now as our opening theme. Yeah, it's a little long. But if you go back and think about it, Janet, when we were doing the Cool Critics, the late Lynn Tolliver said that, well, the opening theme for the Cool Critics, you have to let it play, which was written by Jason's cousin, A.K. And it was just as long, you know. But you know, I don't have a problem with all that. In fact, Darren Durst, another member of Ozone, wrote a theme, and you know, the Michael Gay Show where he sings a theme, gave me that. I didn't have to pay a dime for any of this stuff, so I'm appreciative. Because the thing is that these brothers are so cool, and they're like, even Darren Durst said, "Hey, look, man, whenever you need anything, I got so many tracks, you know, so many great stuff. Anybody need anything, I'm gonna hook up with you." And I'd love to work Darren's stuff because Darren has some really great stuff, you know, some great music. But he just is not a lyricist per se. So I'm reaching out to some folks that are out there and try to help him out. But I appreciate that they try to help us out. But let me go ahead and open up another mic all the way from Los Angeles, California. He's a author, a comedian, an actor. Oh, you can check him out on Drama Bar. And he is so hysterical because he talks about some of the simplest things. And that means ignorance of people. He points it out in his stand-up, and I just love it. I've shared it with some of you guys. Please welcome to the show every Saturday, Mr. Ty Munchie.
Mike, I just called in to just call you a son of a bitch. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to call in. That's all I wanted.
That's why you did
that. I'm good. I can go home now.
Is that why you did that? Okay, I'm going to do one of those J. King moves. That's why your ass is on mute. You know how J. King would do that, right, Janet? I put him on mute.
Yeah. I hope you didn't put him on mute. Simon, are you there?
Yeah, I just put him on mute because he called me a son of a bitch.
Come back on.
But see,
he didn't want nobody, but somebody got to do it, Janet, because if he wouldn't feel better if he didn't.
He says we have our moments. You know what those moments are.
Yeah. He does, and I believe, let me tell you, Janet, you need to have a drink after you done dealt with his ass.
See, he's on mute again. Is he still talking?
Okay, leave the mute button alone, Martin.
But many shows, that's the comedy of their shows, is that every 30 seconds, that's why your ass is on mute. You know, that's why your ass is on mute. They mute each other all day long. It's like, really? Are you guys ever going to get to the topic? You know,
yeah,
but we're not here
to
talk about it. Hey, Tyler, welcome back, sir. But see, I'm going to show you an example of what this show could have been if I followed everybody else's lead. And there's a lot of shows that don't do that type of stuff. And I don't believe in it. But I believe in respect. I do believe in respect. I'm too old because I'm not going to tolerate no young kids up there and disrespect me. I'm not going to allow no adult disrespect me. You follow me? We've all been blessed to live as long as we have and continue to live and continue to share our knowledge and gain knowledge. You don't have to tolerate disrespect, though. You don't. If you've done
right.
nothing wrong, why should you be disrespected?
Right.
If you haven't said anything wrong, if you're not disrespecting anybody else, why should you be beat up on and disrespected? I don't believe in that. If you remember, it was so funny that came in my mind was the movie called Boys in the Hood. If you remember the early part of the movie where Trey and his dad go out fishing and everything, and his dad says, what's one rule? And Trey says, don't respect anybody that doesn't respect you. Simple enough.
Mm.
Y'all seen the movie?
Mm.
He said, don't respect anybody that doesn't respect you. Why would you respect someone who is going to disrespect you? And you're trying to be respectful to them. Why? It makes no sense.
Is Simon on mute?
No, his mic is open. I was messing with him. You know, I muted him for a second and then opened up his mic. Just a minute.
Okay, I'm looking out for you.
Janet, you know you got to let Mike get it out because you know Mike, you keep going and then hold on.
Yeah, I know.
So
my finger's moving towards the button, but no, I'm not going to.
There you go.
All right, so let's get to the topics, you guys. But I just had to throw that out there. Honestly, I had to throw that out there real quick. You know, we're very respectful, and I'm very thankful for everyone.
If you go through that one more time, man, I swear to God.
I'm gonna. Okay. So anyway, So I really want to talk about this story here. I don't know if you guys know about it. And we're gonna get into. In fact, no. First of all, let's get to the politics part first, Janet. Let's get to what Donald J. Trump did. Let's do that first. He was recorded admitting that he took those documents on purpose?
Yes, he was. You know, Donald Trump is the type of person, if you let him talk long enough, he'll tell on himself every single time. And he just made matters worse for himself, you know, because he got caught on a tape talking about some document he had on General Tilly, I think that's what the general name was.
General Milley.
Yeah, and you know, so he got caught, you know, because Donald Trump is the type of person that he would use information, somebody, you know. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I do recall all the money that Trump owed before he got up the White House to all these countries. We have not heard anything else about that. And so every other day I said, when is it going to come out that he gave some information up for, you know, to get rid of that debt he owed? Yeah, he got caught.
Okay.
And Jack Smith is looking into it.
Okay. All right, so what was it that he actually said that they look at this being, okay, again, you
he
know.
He talked
we've
about
been doing
knowing
this,
that
something.
The document was classified, that the document that he had was classified and he could not just show it to anybody. So the things that his lawyers had been saying about Donald Trump, it might have been somebody else who packed up all the files and brought them to Mar-a-Lago. He had nothing to do with it. You know,
those files were from Iran.
Huh?
Those are Iran. Okay. Those were Iran files that they're talking because these are the files from Iran, which were he told someone if he wanted to show them, he could.
Yeah.
He'd have a right to show them. But they was from Iran. So Milley was the one who stopped Donald Trump from trying to start a war with
That's
Iran.
Right. And
so
I
General
remember
Milley,
him
and they all,
to
and what they don't understand,
to
General Milley has already talked to General Council.
January 6th.
The council he's already talked to them. So all the people that he needs, you know, they got done.
Mm-hmm.
Donald can cancel Christmas. He's done. And
mm-hmm.
it's just a matter of time. They say, oh, well, Donald, he told all these stories. Like you said, Janet, as long as he keep talking, he tells on himself. You heard him in that town
mm-hmm.
hall. He sold his soul. He should have shut up. His lawyers couldn't stop him. His ego is going to walk him right on down that aisle. The thing
That's
is,
right.
do they have to take him out?
Okay, so
well,
that, that, that's
time to get up to Jack
right.
Smith.
Right.
You know.
That, well, can you chime in for a moment here? That's the thing that I keep saying, is that we've been going through the Donald Trump Not just since he was president, but even beforehand, we know the history of the Trump family from daddy to son. We know the history. It's documented. And I'm trying to understand how come people are saying or trying to excuse the fact that if you go back before he was president, hell, he was, you know, the thing with the renters and the contractors and all that stuff, those were crimes. Now, he didn't go to jail for that stuff, right? But they were definitely taken to court for that, and they didn't win. So what
because
makes people think that?
Because he always sued everybody. Can I finish
for a minute? What would make a person think that a criminal, you know, it's just like a leopard doesn't change its spots, right? So what would make a person mm-hmm. think that a criminal would all of a sudden stop being a criminal once they become a president? Because now you got more power to be a criminal. You understand my point? I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's crazy because I just watched this thing on Court TV, the story about this guy who would smile in people's faces. This and the other. He worked at many different fast foods, but he had a good way of covering up, made people feel comfortable. He murdered 3 people, damn near murdered a guy, but this guy survived. But that was his way of being, you know, nice and everything. But they saw something. But see, the thing is that where, and I'm not trying to get off the whole point, is that where this guy, if they looked at his whole record, he was robbing fast foods, worked at a Shoney's. But the state he used to live in, hell, he was robbing fast foods there. The company in the other state didn't know his background, didn't do a full background check on him. He did 20 years due to overcrowding. They let him go after 5 years, though he was sentenced for 20 years. And he wound up murdering folks and going back to what he was doing. So I'm saying that to say that where if you're going to forget that what Donald Trump did and his family did or his dad did, which was convicted of, or at least the jury said, yeah, you're guilty of doing this, what makes you think that all of a sudden they change, meaning the followers, the folks who think he still should be president? And they think he should be president for life until he die like a king. I don't get that. I really don't get it.
That's why they are working hard at having enough evidence and make sure that it's evidence that's going to stick with Donald Trump.
And you got a good point. But Timon just said, do they have the balls to go fully through with it? Because this will be the first time in United States history that a president, a former president, could be convicted of a crime.
That's
you know,
why
remember,
they picked George Smith, a Jack Smith. They picked the person that has a record that's out of this world when it comes to getting people convicted. They made sure they picked somebody that was not going to be biased and was going to do his job.
But here's the thing, though, like what Timon just said, and Timon, I want you to chime in on this. It's not a point it is a point of what you just said. Do they have the balls to actually do it? But I think they're afraid of the repercussions from the Trump supporting, you know, the MAGA. Am I right?
I don't think so. It's not MAGA. It's the fact that he's the president. The reason why Bill Barr did not go after him, they could have got him long time ago with the impeachment. Barr blocked that. Barr set it up to where they could not get to him. And now Barr is the one who said that the information from Mar-a-Lago is what's going to get Trump indicted. So Barr even told him, you're done. I can't save you no more. What I'm saying is that the people who got, when they go to do this, just like when they went to get Nixon, it was Ford, because they didn't want to tarnish what it is to be a president. They didn't want
right,
to tarnish
exactly.
it. But guess what? You've got no choice because this is it. And if it hadn't been, and Nixon would have went to jail if it wasn't for the pardon. Biden's not going to pardon Trump. Because let me tell you something. Deep down, and you know this, Janet, the Republicans want that asshole gone. They want him gone. He does not represent what a Republican is. They keep talking this Ronald Reagan yourself, but everybody knows if you do the history on Ronald Reagan, it will show you how much he damaged this country and the reason why you got so many rich folks. We have so many rich people and so many poor people because he cut that. We went from 70% tax on the rich down to 25%.
That's right.
That's why you have the people as rich as they are. We got four people in the United States with more money than 150 million people. That's a damn shame.
And then Trump,
the whole thing with Ronald Reagan's thing was, if you recall, trickle down. Give the rich a tax break, and they will pass it on to the middle class and the poor. You know
they did not pass it on.
But what he did was he came in as a culture warrior too. His whole thing was he also brought up the welfare queen. He also got rid of free college. He also got rid of so many programs that he did. There's war on drugs, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when Clinton came along, all they had to do, they walked that. That's how crack, right after that, when they also did his war on drugs, that's when they came with the three strikes deal. All that stuff came about. So that's why you got to look. Everybody say, oh, they love Reaganomics. Reaganomics, like you said, trickle down, but also it has to show how many programs and how many. He also got rid of all your unions. The reason why 90% of companies today, unions are gone is because of him.
That's right. And my mother told me when Reagan came in office, she said, don't throw anything away. I'm like, why? She said, because it's going to be a depression. And guess what they called it? A recession. Still was the same freaking thing. She said, every time they get in office, you end up losing. We end up losing, you know. And it's basically the truth because they're always concentrating on what can we take from them now. You know, keep them down. Why do you think we don't have a cost of living increase?
Okay, so let me throw this out here because it's 6:33. We have time because I definitely want to get into this other topic. But okay, so the over 79 times the debt crisis has come about here in America to raise the debt since 1960, right? What do you guys think about this deal that they've come up with? Because it seems like America's been in debt since 1960. Right?
Not necessarily, because you had presidents that left with a surplus, but you had presidents that came in and ate that surplus up and left with a deficit. That happened with Clinton. Obama
I didn't say it clearly enough where, you know, we are borrowers. We borrow from other countries. We borrow this, that, and the other. Okay, we might get it down to a certain level. But the things that we since the 1960s, according to what I've said, I don't want to misspeak on it because this is what I saw is that where when we get into debt or we've been in debt, we always owe somebody, okay, at some point, whether it be other countries or so on and so forth. But according to what I saw is that where this has been going on since 1960. What I saw is where we will raise, you know, the debt. Now they've come up with an agreement. Of course, you know, both parties are not happy, but they have to do something. And every time it happens, it gets down to the wire. It gets down to the last minute. What's your thoughts about that? Why is
Ooh,
it that,
yeah.
you know, I'm asking you. What's your thoughts about that? Why is it that where, you know, they sit up there and they fuss and argue and one party can't agree with the other one, but all of a sudden at the last minute, this new agreement, from what I understand, is supposed to go through until 2025. Okay.
And in the meantime, they're going to try and get rid of it completely because it's unnecessary. No other country has the where they got to keep raising the debt ceiling because it seems like the country is always being held hostage when there's a Republican in office. When they're not in charge, and I'm sorry, I didn't say it wrong. When they're in charge, they spin crazy. When they're not in charge, that's when they want to be fiscally responsible. You know, you got it wrong. It shouldn't be that way.
Right. But, I mean, they have, you know, that's the same thing. Like right now, you know, Trump is the one who cut taxes for the rich. Did you know, Janet, they also, a lot of people, there's a mansion tax right now that a lot of the rich are dodging right now because you're supposed to pay money. I'm telling you, we wouldn't even have the homeless problem that we have.
If they paid the price.
If it hadn't been started through Reagan, our mental, he shut down all the hospitals, and they did not change. Also, through the welfare, you know, they left everything up to the states. So states would take that welfare money and invest it in other things and not put it into welfare, into those programs. And that's why a lot of the homelessness is out of control.
Especially in the red states. A lot of, I think it's more so in the red states than anything because they don't have the things that are necessary to help the people who are less fortunate. And if they raise the cost of living, it would be a lot better for a lot of people. You cannot live off of $7, whatever it is, an hour. You can't.
The humanity of this, when you shit upon humanity of our country, I ain't got a problem with anybody being rich. What I have a problem with is greed. What I have a problem with, Ronald Reagan dismantled the middle class. Okay, and I'll put some Democrats in there too, because Clinton locked up over 33 million brothers. You know, with his plan, okay? We had the crack issue because they were doing the whole thing and all they were doing was three strikes, throwing brothers in jail. Also, you can't, you know, when you got out of jail, if it was a felony, you couldn't get a job. So basically it was Jim Crow all over again, which also led to a lot of unemployment. Also, you allow these major venture capitalist companies like Bain Capital, which was Mitt Romney's company, to buy up these single-family homes. All the homes, the reason why you have a housing problem is that you're allowing all these major corporations to buy up all these homes. And it's amazing how many people back all this stuff. These are people who are fighting for stuff that does not help their interests at all. And it's a shame.
And let me go back to what Janet said, is that you can't live off of $7 an hour. Well, many companies have doubled that. But here's the problem, in my opinion, because I see it and I witness it every day. Companies have brought minimum wage up in different areas to $14, $15 an hour. Now, here's what kills me. Come around holiday season, they're quick to advertise, we're about to hire over 5,000 people. But that's temporary. Part-time. They don't tell you about that part. You're hearing that, they're about to hire a bunch of people. Great, the companies are doing good. See, the economy is getting better, blah, 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 blah. But they don't tell you after the holiday season, we just laid off those 5,000 people because they were only temporary part-time. They don't tell you that let me finish. But when they hire these people, they're only going to give them about 14 hours a week. Or, I'm sorry, 16 hours a week. They're not working 40 hours a day. They're part-time. They are there to fill a spot to make it look like we got enough people for the holiday season. They got enough employees on the floor to go ahead and stock the shelves, and they're just holiday stockers 2 days a week. They can hire 30, 40 of them. Yeah, you can do that. But if they're only working 16 hours a week, and after taxes, the money they take home, they're giving right back to the company because they have to buy their lunch, they have to drive their car and everything to and from work. So you're not making any money. Yeah, well, I mean, you're getting paid. But that money is for you to do what they want you to do. Come to work and go home. That's it.
Mike,
you
that
figure
money
what it's
is passed on to the customer.
Excuse me?
That money, okay, out here in California, Target was going to move people's pay up to $24 an hour. All
mm-hmm.
they're going to do is pass that money on to the customer. They're going to raise the prices. So there is no, and there was a great book, if you guys want to read it, it's called Poverty. The guy who wrote it, the Pulitzer Prize winning dude, I think his name is Desmond Matthews or Matthew Desmond, but he wrote that book, and it is about the exploitation of the poor. They are exploiting you, whether you move into, because he wrote another book called Evicted, and how people move into these places where they're just, the people are just slumlords, but they're taking advantage of the people because they got nowhere to go. Some people are strung out on drugs or whatever, and they take their money and everything, but whenever they raise someone's pay, why you think they raised your rent? Your rent went up because, remember during the pandemic, they gave people money, and what had happened?
Mm-hmm.
Then they turned around and they raised people's rent. For what? It was only a few dollars, but they felt that they should raise your rent. So that's part of the exploitation of the poor. And they also get you, like, you know, all those rates you pay on your bank account. Like, say you have to go in, they charge you on your checking account, some bounce. All that is another. Banks make $3-4 billion off of all that extra charge that they put on people. So yeah, they that's all they do. They just pass it off to the customer. Ain't no help.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like what Janet just said: $7 an hour you cannot live off of. But even by duping the public, thinking, well, we're going to pay you $14-15 an hour. But here's the thing: it sounds great. But you're not making $14-15 an hour if your hours are cut in half. You're back to $7. I mean, do the math. It's just common sense. You're back to $7, you know, because the things that were, I mean, if you look at it, where technically full time is 32 hours, at least here in Georgia. It's not really 40 hours. It's 32 hours. That's considered full time. So a company can legally just schedule you for 32 hours a week and call it full-time. At least here in Georgia. I don't know about other states. But then when they cut you back less than that, and even if you're part-time, what sense of me, you know, thinking that as a part-timer that I'm going to at least work, you know, so many hours a week, but then you only schedule me for one day, 2 days a week, for 5 or 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
10 to 12 hours a week. And then after taxes, because it's going to get taxed, after taxes, my check is going to show where I made maybe $100 that whole week. Maybe.
Not only that, Michael, but also...
Now, I'm not done. So let's look at it where... I'll say $100, but let's look at it in this sense. So you go buy lunch, which is going to be about $10, roughly, okay, up to $10. Now you got $80. You got to put gas in your car, all right? Not just to get to and from work, but put gas in your car to even look for another job. that's going to, you know, probably give you more time. You're still not able to save a dime. You're not able to save a dime. And don't have any kids. Ain't got nothing, a single everyday person. I don't know where that background noise is coming from, but someone has a lot of background noise here. Where you find it? But that's the sad part.
I don't think
somebody has noise in the background. Please mute it. Please mute it. Hello? Or either you're on a speakerphone or something, and it's coming through where it's disturbing the show. Okay, that's better. All right, Janet, you were saying?
I was the thing I was saying is when you do get a raise, a lot of times they end up raising your health insurance and other things within your check that you don't even see that you had a raise when it's all said and done. You know, you don't just get a raise or a cost of living. You get that little increase and they add something else to your check to make you be you lose that money. I know it used to happen to me. My health insurance got raised every single time I got an increase.
Okay.
And that's not fair.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I'm just like, you know, it just blows my mind is that where people don't think about that. Again, like I said, you know, they advertise all this crap about hiring, you know, all these thousands of people for the holidays, and then people don't realize that. But after that particular time that the companies, you know, do what they want to do, they don't announce, well, those 5,000 people that we hired, we laid off. Yes, the holiday season's over with, and they're unemployed. Check in next year when we hire another 5,000 people and lay them off. See, they're duping the public to think that these people have a you know, a job that is where they're going to be there for a while. I guess they're going to be able to. Support their families.
Well, every month they have been saying that the job market has been increasing.
Well, the sad thing is that we're
the job.
The thing is, right? Sad thing is that where I know most people I know work two jobs. Literally, I know many people that are working two jobs. They work the day shift at this place. And then an overnight at that place, okay, and still can't make ends meet. Now, some folks will say, oh, well, I guess they're living beyond their means, trying to live a certain lifestyle. They're just trying to take care of it. They're just trying to pay their rent. Oh, and oh, my God, rent for an apartment now? You might as well go buy a house.
It's more than a house.
I just
some
said,
people
you might as well go buy.
Yeah. I know some people who spend quite a bit, you know, anywhere from maybe $15,000 to $2,000 a month just for rent.
Okay, so I want to go ahead and I'm looking in the chat room. Bring It Boy has stopped by. Hey, Bring It Boy. And said hello to Janet. And if he is there, Officer,
hello.
No, Officer Crenshaw is there. Officer Crenshaw's not here. Time and Ship from L.A. is here with us. Also, Bring It Boy says, seasonal work is just that, and you're right. Time is up. Please go. You need to clarify that. You said seasonal work. Okay. Now, here's the thing, Bring It Boy. People do go in to companies, and they will take a position in a seasonal position. Right. I'm aware of that. In hopes to be full time. And many of them I've talked to, trust me, I've worked for all three major companies, Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart. And they make them think that, hey, look, you might be full-time here. You prove yourself, blah, blah, blah. I've heard the conversations. I've heard individuals say, yeah, I'm trying to get full-time, but I'm just trying to get my foot in the door just to get pushed out.
Things have changed, but whenever I went for a job, I got the job that same day. And when they were laying off, I've been called in the office several times to say I had nothing to worry about. And the reason why, I did my job. I worked. I didn't play around. I did, and whatever I did, I made sure it was right, correct. And I got rewarded for it. Up to the point where I end up being the senior planner 3, you know?
Okay. And so you were blessed with that. But the point I'm bringing up is that where it's sad that where in my experience in retail, and I just mentioned the 3 major companies I have worked for and still work for 1, though I worked in construction too. But the thing is that where these companies bring in a bunch of new hires and get their hopes up, hoping that they will be kept on, you know, that the company will keep them. And then what happens when they let these people go, you as a customer, maybe not you personally, but many customers are pissed off because there's not enough people to work the store. They're like, is there anybody over here in this department? No. Can somebody help me over here? I can't help you over there. I have to stay over here. What the hell happened?
Those are the main ones they end up doing.
How come stores cannot stay fully staffed year-round? I understand hiring extra help for the influx of customers during the holiday seasons. But when you go to certain stores and they got 26 cash registers, 26 cash registers there. 20 of them are self-checkout. 6 of them is supposed to have a person behind them, but those are closed down. Where's the customer service? The customer's trying to get in and get out. How come you cannot keep enough employees to help the customer? That's the only problem that I hear from people all the time. Every day.
In order to make money, Michael, you're not going to have a bunch of people standing around waiting for a customer to come in. You know,
Janet, I understand that, but Janet, I'm there every day, and what I'm telling you, I've witnessed with my own eyes, and I hear with my own ears. It makes no sense. Now, I'm not saying that every company practices this particular policy. Maybe certain management staff does that. Because, see, if you keep the key thing is that if you keep down shrink and labor, that's beneficial to the management.
Yeah.
That's their bonus. Let me finish, please. That's their bonus. But you should not do it to the point of where you are not giving good customer service. You shouldn't. And then when it comes to theft, when you look at theft, theft has really been on the rise due to self-checkouts. Theft has really been on, because when you have an individual actually scanning the product, they're going to make sure it's done. Cameras all the store. That has gone up so much due to self-checkouts because people think they can act like they scanned that thing, and they didn't. Put it in the bag. So that camera is looking at you, and now technology is so amazing now. The people that are standing at the self-checkout at certain stores have a little device there that they can actually monitor that particular swiping device that you're using and see if you actually swiped it. And if you don't put in your bag, they're going to stop you. they're going to call AP and say, oh, yeah. Now, unfortunately, this has been a good thing and a bad thing because some customers were accused of trying to steal an item. Now, if you miss one or two, maybe the thing malfunctioned, didn't read it, you thought it read it. But if you swipe three items, but then the other 50 you have in your cart didn't go through, well, yeah, now you steal it. Because that register is going to beep to let you know it picked it up. But now it has been proven that self-checkout is really more of an issue of a shrink for stores. More so. Bring It Boys says seasonal workers are the ones you need to watch out for. They will get your job. They have a way talking to management and make something you did that was against policy. Well, I can't totally agree with that. No. In fact, I'm not going to agree with that, Bring It Boy. Seasonal workers are folks. Some come in there that just really want a part-time job. They don't want full-time. Some do just want a few hours a week because they have another job. You know, they just want to supplement of what they're working with. Well, I cannot agree with you on that. You know, but there are people, as I said, that try to get their foot in the door and hopefully position. Simon, you've been quiet. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, like I said, I've worked with cats. I worked with a dude who said that he didn't like the way white people were staring at him, and he was a seasonal worker, and he quit. I told him, I said, bro, I said, you're going to get a lot of white folks looking at you. His wife begged him, don't quit. But he quit anyway. I just looked at it, he don't want to work. It's just when you look at, you know, like you said, you know, if you want a job, it's a lot of work and everything else. But I still say you cannot keep exploiting the American people. But after a while, it's not even the minimum wage. They do not want to pay the American worker. They just don't. I mean, you can look at the writer's strike. You can look at anything that comes down to corporations and money. And they got the money.
True.
Apple got so much money, it's sick. These corporations have good gobs of money. And the thing is, poor people fight for them. They didn't get rid of all your unions. They didn't get rid of all your medical. Then you got guys saying, oh, well, man, how come they're making us pay dues? Yeah, so what, you got to pay dues? But, hey, I just retired, and I know I have 100% medical. I don't pay nothing. But that took 25 years of working in probation. But trust me, they wanted to. They've been trying. A new person coming into my job today does not have any of the benefits that I have, and that's a shame.
That's a shame, true, of
what they're going to do. And you can keep, oh, minimum wage, screw that. Don't keep talking about them. Pay these people their money. You want people to come to work? It's already been proven, Mike. Take care of your workers, and your workers will take care of you. But they believe in taking care of the shareholders. That's their thing. And so if you want to see more homeless, more people losing their jobs and whatnot because everything, and people burning, they're going to keep raising. And so what happens when it just gets to the point? And I'll ask you this question, Mike. How much money do they need? How much money do these people need? How many billions and billions of dollars do you need, bro, to just say that you're living good?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need a 20 million, like, you know, Beyonce and Homeboy went out and bought a $200 million home. $200 million.
Right.
Okay. For what? That's just, what are you going to do with it? What are you doing to help society? What are you doing to
you know, because it's going to come to a head. Why you think folks are robbing folks the way they're doing? Why do you think crime is out of control? Because guess what? You can't keep doing this. You got to deal with the mental side of it. You got to deal with all the robberies and everything. And guess what? You cannot be a cop today. $5,000 is like getting paid $24 an hour. They are salaries have stagnated since 1971. You want a cop today, you're going to have to pay at least $150,000 to start. If you want that, and you better give them good benefits, and you better give them to where they can have a 401k. You ain't giving up none of that, man. Everybody coming to fight crime. Ain't going to happen.
Okay.
There's a county in Georgia
that being said, you guys, our guest has just called me. He's here on the board, and I'm sorry, I have to cut this short at this moment because we're going to take a quick music break and come back with our special guest. We have to continue this conversation, but, you know, what both of you just said is a point well taken, because it's just an ongoing process, and it's going to get worse. Like I said, and I told another co-worker of mine a while back when the company said, hey, we're going to give a raise across the board. You know, well, how do you do that when one person has a different type of skill set or a different department, but you're going to pay everybody the same? But initially, it was where it was based on, you know, that department. You follow me? Where if you're the guy who pushes in the carts, your pay should not be equal as to the person that does something that's a little bit more difficult. You know what I mean? And unfortunately,
I wouldn't want my pay to be the same.
Excuse me?
I wouldn't want my pay to be the same because I know I went above and beyond, and I expected way more. So I got my 5%, 6%, and 7%.
Okay. So we're going to have to talk about that again because, like I said, our guest is here on the board. So let's take a music break, get ready to welcome to the show Mr. T.C. Tompkins. And here's a song that Mr. Tompkins had the honor to work with, or this artist, I should say. So I'm going to play this first, and then we'll come back, and we're going to have our conversation with music of, wow, this guy. I mean, his whole story is amazing, and I recommend you check out the book. We'll be right back. You're listening to TMGS, The Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. We'll be right back. the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL Atlanta, Georgia. Of course, you all know that Sade with Smooth Operator. And our guest today, man, he's worked with the likes of Sade, Michael Jackson, Teddy Pendergrass, Chaka Khan, and a host of others. And I'm very thankful and honored to have him join us today. I'm going to open up his mic momentarily. So, and he has a new book out, and we're going to talk about that. So please put your hands together and welcome to the show, Mr. T.C. Thompson. Hello, T.C.
Oh, I love the audience response. How you doing, guys?
All right. That's our audience. Thank you, audience, for the cheering. How are you doing, my brother? Happy Saturday to you, and thank you for joining us.
Happy Saturday to you too, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. First, to all the listeners, I have to let you know that Mr. Lee Bailey, another great icon in the music industry, brought this gentleman to my attention. So we should have a great conversation because, you know, Lee Bailey is one of the most amazing radio announcers of our time.
Lee is a legend. Oh, yeah, Lee is a legend himself. Yeah, he goes back in the industry. Long way.
Man. Oh, yeah, I love that brother. He's amazing. So, yes. TC, you have this book that's coming out that shares over 50 years in the music industry. 50 years. And I don't know many that can, you know, share that or that number. And this book, of course, which I've been reading, and I have to admit, I've read a little bit here and there, but I find myself going back and reading what I already read because I'm like in awe of that one chapter. You know, I'm like, I got to read that again.
Yeah. What chapter is that? Is that the epic chapter, probably?
Epic records. Wow. Because you know, Michael Jackson was on that label. Many other artists on there. I mean, there's so many labels you've worked with over the years. But yes, it's the epic records part I found so intriguing. Yeah. And if you don't mind, just kind of share a little bit for the listeners, a little bit about you and your journey. You know, as far as getting in. To this, you know, your hometown, if you don't mind, I'm sure that will be
sure. Oh, no, not a problem. I got into the industry at Stax Records. That was the beginning of my career in the industry, was at Stax Records in Memphis, Tennessee. Got to know such greats as David Porter and Isaac Hayes and DeVar Case, all of those guys. That was a dream come true for me, first of all, just to get a job in the industry because I hadn't. No background in the industry. I had just come back from Vietnam, okay? Just gotten out of the service, just got married. My wife was from Memphis, Tennessee, and I just had a desire to get into the industry. And God saw it fit to let that happen for me. Got in the industry, worked with Capitol, then went on to Capitol, worked with Natalie Cole and Mays, and Tavares while I was over there. Left Capitol and went to ABC where I worked with Chaka Khan and Rufus, worked with the Dramatics, worked with the Crusaders, Steely Dan, a whole bunch of acts at ABC. Then left ABC and went to CBS Records. When I first got to CBS Records, you know, we were Columbia and Epic was combined, so the staffs worked both labels. And so during that early part of my time at CBS, I worked with some greats. I worked with Herbie Hancock, Manny Rippleton, George Duke, Tyrone Davis, Johnny Taylor, Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis. I mean, it was just, you know, rich, Gladys Knight. And anyway, after there, went to New York and headed Epic Records Department. I went to New York in 78. And then it just so happened that the Jacksons were signed right before I came to New York. And Michael did his first solo project in 79.
which was off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I had work with my wife Michael on Off the Wall. My first project that I got my teeth into as national was SOS Band. Worked with SOS Band. Worked with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Worked with Alexander O'Neill and Sherelle. That was on Taboo Records. We also distributed Philly International, which was Gamble and Huss label, which was Teddy Pendergrass, the OJs, Patti LaBelle, the Jones Girls, Gene Kahn, and also on Epic we had M. Toomey, Isley Brothers, Luther Vandross, all of these acts. Matter of fact, you know, Larkin Hall came over to Epic and CBS and took over the senior A&R department back in the early 70s. And Larkin was behind signing the Jacksons, Tina Marie, and Luther Vandross.
And let me ask you a question, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you don't mind, for the listeners and my co-hosts, because, in fact, I'm pretty sure they all have some questions for you in a moment. But when you say work with, can you kind of break that down? What was really your job at that point in time?
Well,
I
was vice president of Epic. Basically, I took over Epic Records during the time that CBS and all the major labels were doing a major cutback. They cut, I think in my department, they cut 18 to 20 people. That was my first assignment as national director, was to fire 18 people. Then I was given vice president. But it was a rebuilding process back then. We really didn't have any black artists to speak of on Epic, per se, other than M. Toomey. Isley Brothers had their own label. They had T-Neck Records. I worked closely with the Isley Brothers and Kelly and all of them running. And I worked closely with Philly International with Camp Gamble and Huff. You know, and basically all of those labels fell up under my, my leadership. I was responsible for all the custom labels and Epic Records. And I basically developed a campaign for Never Too Much, for all of Teddy Pendergrass solo projects, In Between the Sheets, Juicy Fruit, Lover Girl from Tina Marie. I was in charge of the marketing promotion for all of those projects and developed the entire program on Sade.
Wow. Speechless, because as I read the book, you know, I hadn't got to all that part of it. Well, the epic part, like I said, I have to read back into it. But, man, you have one hell of a resume here, you know. And
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you really do.
Amazing, Ron.
You know, a lot of folks know about the artists, but they don't know about the people behind the artists and the people who actually dreamed or thought about, you know, like you said, the promoting and getting it out there that got those artists, you know, into the public's mindset.
Absolutely. Michael, like I say, like I like the title of the book, during the 90% of my career, you know, radio was key. Radio was the only outlet where you could get any kind of music exposed. You know, so if you didn't have a successful radio campaign, you basically didn't have a hit record. You know, that was where all the eggs were in the basket at during that period of time, especially during my years, during the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It was nothing but radio.
Well, then that song came out when MTV came on the scene.
Yeah,
I think their first video
came out in the 80s.
What was it called? Video Killed the Radio Star is the name of the song.
Really?
I forgot the name of the group, but the first video that MTV played, I believe, or it was one of the first ones, can't remember the name of the group, but the song was called Video kills the radio star. I want to go ahead and open up the mics to my co-host because I'm pretty sure they have some questions and want to say hello to you, sir. The lady of the house, Miss Janet Davis, is on the board. Janet, say hello to our guest, Mr. T.C. Tompkins. Do you have your questions ready? I think she might be on mute.
Okay,
Janet, you
do. Yes, I keep forgetting I'm on mute. Sorry about that. Yes, I do have a few questions, but I'm just going to ask one right now. I mean, I did read a lot of your book. Michael shared it with me, and I was also in awe of all the artists that you listed and all the different record labels. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you did mention,
you.
I think it was like on page 89, when you talked about George Clinton came up missing. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah, I did a interview with George at Johnson Publications. WJPC radio station was located inside Johnson's publication. And whenever we had a major act in town, we'd always take them by Johnson's publication, hopefully for some free press and a radio interview. But George disappeared on me. George was in the bathroom. George had bought some self-medication in with him. And,
now, here we go. There you go. Go ahead. I'm pretty sure he wasn't using the bathroom for just using the bathroom.
No, he just wasn't using the bathroom. But he knew the answer to that question, which he asked me. I see what kind of co-host you got there. That's one of the little things in there. There are several stories in there like that because I had. You have to realize in the late 70s and 80s, man, narcotics was everywhere. I tell most people that interview me, you know, they used to have a TV show called Miami Vice. So you don't you don't have a successful TV series pattern after drugs unless it's just everywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And drugs were everywhere. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, when I first moved to New York in the late 70s, you would not believe New York City from where it is today with Central Park and, you know, and Walt Disney and all the stuff that they have down there. Man, you couldn't go down to 42nd Street in that area of the city.
Wow.
Well, it was peep shows and drug dealers everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Matter of fact, my children, it's a story in the book about my children. I used to drive through Harlem sometime to go going to Jersey just so my kids could see Harlem when we talked about it. And there was an area on 116th Street, and I can't remember what the cross street was, but it was like a flea market of heroin addicts. They would be standing in the middle. They'd be standing in the middle of the street, nodding, with children in their arms. That's how bad it was. Yeah. Okay. Did I cover that for you?
Yes, you did. And I have one other question, if it's okay with Michael. You talked about your tour in Vietnam, and you were talking about the smell that was in the first part of it. So what did you mean by the smell? Was it just
I guess being American, you just wasn't used to, like New York City has a smell and Philadelphia has a smell, but those are pleasant smells, until the garbage not picked up. But Vietnam just had a different odor. It was it smelled sour. You know what it was? I know what it was. You know, they used to ferment fish. Yes. They use that sauce on. They use that sauce on everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I use it.
There you go. And when you first get to Vietnam, that's the first thing you smell. Because it's foreign to you. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, after you're there a week or so, you don't smell nothing.
And you find out that sauce tastes good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now, I mean, I ate Vietnamese food while I was there. You know, you have to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to adjust to that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Interesting. We also have our other co-host here. He's been here in our first hour. He normally is available just 1 hour of the show, but fortunately, he's still hanging out here with us, Mr. Time and Ship. Do you have any questions for our guest, Mr. T.C. Topley?
I don't have really any questions. I do love the fact that, you know, that you've worked with everybody from a historical standpoint, because you came up in a business, you know, where, especially with black artists, do you remember when they were doing mirroring, where they like had Pat Boone had to mirror Aretha Franklin, and how the adjustment? Because that music, man, you can't find that no more. You can't find the musicians and the talent that was there, and you were a part of all that, man, to bring that forward, and that's why we still got great. I'll listen to. You know, ain't nothing wrong. You can't go wrong with the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, because
you can't,
work and all those great bands that came together. I mean, we're lucky to
have that. You know what I really like about that era? There was a ton of originality because everybody still used their tracks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A ton of originality, a ton of creativity because made lyrics and sung songs. It wasn't any songs that you could think of that was just a hook and a beat. There wasn't no such thing back then, you know. It was more lyrical content. It was more substance in the material. And really, like I would say, and I don't even know if we want to get on that subject, but I remember how hip-hop started. And how it is now. Now, there's some hip-hop artists going back to that. But, you know, hip-hop in the beginning was a revolutionary kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like,
I listened to
the Blue Notes. Hey, T.C., I listened to some Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, man, and let me tell you. And then when Sean Page sings that one song that they're known for, man, that stuff just melts you, man. You can't beat that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I believe Gamble and Huff are two of the best R&B producers that ever was. I mean, I love their production, their strings. I was listening to some of the stuff that Harold Melvin and Blue Notes did with whatever the female artist was doing the female part in there. But I mean, it's an orchestration of the material, which I really love. You know, Gavel and Huff is a little master.
That was Sharon Page, right?
Yeah, that was Sharon Page.
Yeah, I love that material, man.
You know, I have to think back where now you being the. Executive that you've been in, and plus we're going to get into and you share also what you're doing now because you're still in the industry, you're still doing your thing. I remember a cat named Lowell Silas. You remember Lowell?
Yeah, I remember Lowell. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My
Lowell
fact, I did some dealings with Lowell.
I'm sorry.
I said I did some dealings with Lowell while I was with Teddy Riley.
Okay. See, I remember Lowell. Years back, I used to work for with Big Ben's, and then it changed over to Warehouse Music Store. You remember over there in Los Angeles on La Brea and Rodale?
Yeah. I remember Warehouse.
Yeah. Well, there on that corner, that big used to be a grocery store, and they made it into a big record video type thing. I was the title was video director. they made it sound real cool, you know. But it took the manager really a deep partner, you know. But my name tag says Michael, video director. But Lowell was a promotional guy. He would come in and do the displays and this, that, and the other. And
he was a merchant. He was a merchandiser. Yeah.
Right. He was a merchandiser. Right. It put up all the displays and everything. And then years down the road, I'm looking and I'm like, you know, executive producer Lowell Slice. I'm like, Lowell? The merchandiser?
Yeah.
And I met him at a Jack the Rapper convention many years ago. And of course, you know, he had his entourage and everything. And I managed to holler at him. I said, you probably don't remember me. Like, yeah, I do. He said, I remember you. And I had a chance to really talk with him. I mean, that right there was like, you know, amazing to me to see him go from being, you know, out there in the stores doing the merchandise and everything to becoming a, you know, the position like yourself.
Absolutely.
You
well,
know,
Michael,
I mean,
I started off, like I told anybody, if you read in the book, I started off selling 45s. That was my first job. That was my first job in the industry, was driving around four states, opening up accounts with retail outlets and wholesale outlets. You know, that was during the attempt when Stax was trying to get into distribution, you know, which I will always believe they were put out of business, you know, because several major labels tried to buy into that and Al Bell and them wasn't having it. And when they turned the money down, I feel like they got a target on it back then. You know, no black label was doing that. No black label was doing their own distribution. Still don't.
Well, you know what? You're right, because I remember, let's see, well, Solar Records, you know, I'm good friends with the whole family, Dick Griffey, God rest his soul, but, I'm good friends with Miss Carrie, you know, the matriarch, her daughter, and everything. They've all been on the show. Solar didn't have distribution.
Through,
I think they were going through RCA.
First they went through independent distributors. Now, first they did the same trick that Motown did. You know, they did independent distributors. Now, that's another thing
Motown
I really
had, but didn't Motown have Pickwick at one point, I think? I think it was Pickwick.
Well, they did, but not in the beginning, they had nobody. They had independent distributors. Yeah. I mean, that's how they got their start. That's basically how most of any black label back in those days got their start. They had to go through independent distributors. They had to go through, I can't think of that, Big State, either Selecto, MS that was in Chicago.
Malcola was one too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, James
Pickwick and Marcola. But do you remember when Motown hooked up with everybody knows Universal Studios, but Universal Studios owned MCA, and MCA was a distributor. And that's when I remember the event where
I remember
they had this whole thing where Motown and MCA got together
and MCA started. Gerald Busby was I did business with Gerald Busby while he was over there, because we had two acts with Motown. No, we had one act with Motown, one act with MCA. We had Guy with MCA, and we had Rex and Effect with Motown. I did the Rex and Effect project too. We did Today, Rex and Effects, Redhead, Kingpin, all that kind of stuff, all that stuff that we did while Teddy had his production company. I signed Teddy when he was 15 to his first deal. He had a group called Kids at Work.
Not Men at Work, Kids at Work.
Kids at Work.
Let me share something, though, because
it ended up being Guy, but go ahead.
Okay. Oh yeah, and you know what? It's so funny. Yeah, guy. I had a friend named Mashawn Burst. She worked over at MCA over here in Georgia, and she had gave me the cassette of Guy. I went to her house, and she said, "I want you to check this out." And I played it. At first, I really thought it was the Gap Band because of the, you know, the vocal sounds, you know, Aaron.
Yeah, that Aaron.
Aaron had that Charlie Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really thought it was the Gap Band. She said no, and she said because she put it on the tape and she gave me the tape. And honestly, you guys, she gave me this tape like months before it even hit the radio. And I'm going driving down the street, and I'm blasting it. They're like, "Who the hell is that? Is that the Gap Band?" I'm like, "No," you know. But
That album almost didn't happen too.
Yeah,
because you know, once Gerald Busby signed Gap, he left Motown and he left MCA and went to Motown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. So that almost didn't come in.
Yeah, Guy didn't have the hookup anymore. Yeah, so Al Pella, which was the president of Columbia Records, took over that position. And just so happened, I knew Al from when I was running, when I used to whoop his butt over there at Columbia when I was at Epic.
Let me ask you something else now, and I'm sure Janet probably has come up with her next question. But back then, you know, I mean, there was a lot of competition. I'm sure, well, of course, you know, and we were talking about the distributions and everything. And you look at all the labels, you had Polydor, you had, as you said, Philly and Universal, all these independent labels. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the major ones like MCA and all of a sudden start buying out these smaller labels. Looking back, you know, do you think, well, now we're in the digital age. Looking back, what do you think could have been done different where it's not what it is now? Or are you happy with the digital age?
No, I'm not happy with the way it is. And I think it shows in the music. You know, it shows in the and what has become the most powerful to us, which is money. You know, that's really
greed.
The goal of everything is greed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And greed has kept us from getting where we should have gone, and greed has kept our eyesight short. We got very short eyesight.
Right.
You know, because I remember.
And had you not
ventured
down. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Huh?
I
remember when hip hop wasn't about bling.
Mm.
No. What was
it then? In your mind, what was it about?
Well, now you know what? It was a revolutionary music in the beginning. That's what hip hop was, and that's what it represented. But somehow or another, it got sold. It got tainted in the process, like everything in America, though, man. Money will ruin anything. I mean, you know, if you want to mess up the mix, put some money in it, you know. And that's what happened, you know. When these artists come to a label, and matter of fact, you can't put it on the label, you know. We're seeing what happened, what sales. It's easy to be non-controversial. Don't rock no boats. Make your money. Go home. You know, and that's the easiest way to do it. But I do believe that was the beginning. In the beginning, major labels set out to buy up all of the black music companies. I mean, that was their purpose. That's what they started out to do. Just like CBS and the majors tried to buy in on Stax, and they wouldn't sell it, so they out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But the other companies, like Philly International and Taboo and T-Neck Records and SOS Band. Shit, they all Sony now.
And they were
Michael Jackson's. You know, Sony just paid Michael $500 million for half his publishing. You know, I had an argument today with a German guy, I think it was, or some stuff. He was telling me about the Beatles and how, you know, they had changed history and blah, blah, blah. And I tried to tell him from the beginning, the Beatles' music was not original music. They took that music from Bo Diddley and James Brown and, you know, I mean, you know, and I was trying to explain this to him, and I got into a heavy conversation with him about it. I don't know why, because I knew he wouldn't understand. But I was also trying to tell him that there is no artist in the world, living or dead, that can compare to the revenue that Michael Jackson is doing. There's nobody close.
Amen.
You're right.
Okay, it's nobody. I mean, Marilyn Monroe. Yeah, Jimmy Dean, John Wayne, I mean, what's this, Bob Dylan, Billy Joel, not even in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely right.
That's
factually true. I'm not saying that trying to brag. Yeah. That's just factually true. You know, you can look it up now because there's nobody close.
You're right. Sometimes they try to say that right now there's a group that's supposed to have made more records and did more than Michael Jackson, and everybody know that's a lie, you know.
It's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody creates the income that Michael Jackson creates. I mean, matter of fact, you could just look at the payout. Sony just paid his family $500 million for 50% of his publishing, not the $200 to $300 million that they paid Bruce Springsteen, all that kind of stuff, you know. And it's just no comparison. Matter of fact, I had an interview with London Radio. London Radio was one of the first people that interviewed me, Angie Graves over there on Smooth Radio. Basically because of the popularity of Sade in London,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that I had worked mm-hmm. with a lot of artists that were in Europe, and the artist brought my name up to the radio stations over there. So I interviewed her, and she was just telling me that they have this countdown, the hottest new records and all of that stuff. She said, bar none, every time they put it up, anything up against one of Michael Jackson's records, Michael Jackson mm-hmm. always wins. And he's been dead 40 years.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, though, Mr. Thompson, about the interview you had with Fox News after Michael Jackson's
mm-hmm.
death. You know, I'm a fan of Michael Jackson. I've been following him. Even right now, I still follow just by all the things that is said about him, you know. But
mm-hmm.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that interview? Do you recall the interview you did?
I remember doing an interview with Fox after the death of Michael. I know if I'm sure they brought up the fact that they thought he was a pedophile, which I
mm-hmm.
that my dad days I would think of a lie. Cause I mean I had conversations with Michael. Yeah, matter of fact, I didn't even expose the stuff on that interview that I exposed in the book. I never told anybody how close Michael and I was until the book, the conversations that we had,
mm-hmm.
because I was real upset when he was paying that money out, you know, because I knew it was a lie. Okay.
No, he was taken advantage of, you know.
Oh, yeah, he was taken advantage of. Yeah, he was taken. He was that kind of person. He was a very, very wise businessman. You know, the thing, people don't realize how far ahead of his time, and I know this is going to help the rumors that he was murdered. is that, you know, Michael was trying to buy Marvel Studios before anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that shows you the kind of businessman this man had. But he was nobody's fool. Okay.
It seems like every time somebody that's black tries to buy something that's big, something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, they end up dead.
I mean, I hated to say that, because I mean, Michael, you know, matter of fact, one of the interviews that I had at Fox, I don't know if this is the one you're talking about, when they asked me about the $400 million that he owed when he died, were you concerned about all the money that he owed? I knew then. And I said in that interview, I said, that money's going to be paid off in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah, I knew how valuable he was to a bunch of white people dead. I really did. You know, I hate to say it that way, but that's just that's the truth. Okay.
Yeah, I believe it.
Okay. And
when you talk about Michael being a good businessman, I just recently saw something, which I remember the story of where Eminem, a.k.a. Slim Shady, dissed Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Michael never said a word about it. He never said a word about it. He was like, okay, cool. But he bought Eminem's entire catalog.
Yep.
He bought his entire catalog. So anytime Eminem's records were played or he performed, Michael got paid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he talked about the same thing. He did the same thing to the Beatles.
Yes, he did.
He was talking to Paul McCartney. He bought Paul McCartney's publishing from under him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. They just made some arrangements to get parts of that back. But he was a very shrewd businessman. And he was
I did read an article one time where a person said if Michael Jackson was not a recording artist, he would be one hell of a music industry lawyer. I read an article that said that about him. He would have been probably the most sought after.
One of the sharpest. One of the sharpest. I mean, we got along because I guess I was the, excuse the French, I was the N element in his life, okay? Because my understanding was limited. Okay. he was a much bigger person than me. He recognized and appreciated my view, you know, because I didn't have an understanding for the BS.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, though, and I ask this of all of my special guests. If you were not in the music industry, what would you think you would be doing or would have been doing outside of that?
I don't know, man. I came close to being a gangster. I had that element. You know what? That element was in the industry. You know, much in the industry. Yeah, it was very much in the industry in the late 70s.
Well, you got the two nights. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I didn't even put that in my book, but I have cussed Mr. Suge Knight out. I didn't even think that was worth the
life. You cussed Suge Knight out? Wait a minute, you cussed Suge Knight out?
Oh yeah, yeah. His brother West and I was doing some business, and West had given me his mother's number to call him, and I called his mother's house, and Suge told me don't call his number no more. I told him, hell, his brother paid me my money. I didn't say it in that way. And I said, you won't have to worry about me calling. If you got a problem with it, you know where I live.
Wow. But now, looking at your photo, I know Michael Jackson wasn't a short guy, but I saw the photo of you and Michael standing next to
him. Oh, yeah. Michael, 6 feet.
You're not a short guy. How tall are you, though? No, how tall are you? Because you look a tall guy.
I'm 6'7".
Oh, okay. So then Suge would have had to deal with something then.
But wait a minute. You're 6'7"? Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
You look 6'7".
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, well, I'm 6'7", weigh about 225, something like that.
Wow. You know,
but,
wow. Yeah, because
as you were looking at
Michael Jackson, I was like, wait a minute, I know Michael ain't no short dude. I said,
Michael, tall.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as anybody that will get, when they get the book, they'll understand that I was very daring. That was one of my, I don't know if it was one of my major falling points, and you know, it was one of my strong points, and it was also one of my weak points, you know, because I didn't think about backing down from anything. I always accepted a challenge. I love the competition of the industry, you know, and you know, I love kicking the competitions behind. I cannot tell a lie. You know, because at one point in the industry, I'm sure I was one of the most hated guys in the industry. You know, you cannot represent Sade, Michael Jackson, Luther Vandross, Teddy Pendergrass, Isley Brothers, and OJs without people hating you. And Patti LaBelle.
Of course. Of course.
You know, yeah, our roster was so strong. Mm-hmm. And I had a real tight team. We didn't take any prisoners. We just had a phenomenal run. We had great material. And I tried to get as much out of it as possible. Matter of fact, we broke every sales record that Epic had ever had.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And, I should have titled the book The House That Michael Jackson Built, because Michael Jackson built Epic Records.
Amen.
True. He did.
Okay. He made Epic Records.
There's no doubt about it.
Well, I sure will be buying the hardcover of this book because it's a lot of wonderful pictures of different artists and you and just, you know, it's like a keepsake.
So, thank you. It's a lot of great stories. I mean, I cannot lie. I had the time of my life. I love music. It motivates me more than anything other than sex. You know, as I say in the book, it's like drugs to me. You know, I mean, music is like drugs to me.
Amen.
Wow.
You know, as I said, I mean, I was fortunate to be, you know, blessed to be around, you know, different artists over the years and has so many great artists on this show. Janet has been here 100% with me. We've had some awesome folks here. And, you know, many a times I've said, man, this has got to be the greatest show. But I have to say that this is one of the greatest conversations I've ever had with someone in the
who
behind the scenes cat, you know, that. You know, that actually directed and formed and guided the careers of these artists. And we'd love for you to come back and join us again. We really would.
I would love to come back, man. I enjoy talking to you guys. Like I say, it's tons of stories in the book. More risque than Clinton. George Clinton disappeared at Puff Johnson. Only thing about that story that really upset me was Johnson's publications. You know, that was big stuff, you know. So, and I think at that time I was a regional or something, but it made me a little nervous, George and his escapades. But George and I still friends. I'm still friends with George. Yeah. And before we close it, I want to say my favorite artist to hang out with was Teddy Pendergrass.
All right.
Well, hold on. Before you go, I gotta play this one track, and we come back because and I'm sorry. This is one that was later in Teddy's career. And I love the song. It didn't get the radio play I thought it should compared to all the other great love songs, since we were talking about music and sex. This song here, mm-hmm. I love so much that I turned it on
well,
to a lot of folks.
I wasn't representing him. I wasn't representing him when he put this out. That's why I didn't get a lot of play. But go ahead and play it.
But I want to play it because you did represent him. Here's Teddy Pendergrass. I love this song. We'll be right back. I'm so thankful that you joined us this Saturday. And, you know, again, love for you to come back anytime that, you know, because We are a variety show. We talk about a lot of different topics and subjects, but like yourself, I'm a music
well, you
lover.
Know,
I love.
We didn't get a chance to talk about Teddy Riley, and I'll have to talk about him the next time we're on, because I think that's one of my big discoveries was Teddy. Okay.
Okay. We'll definitely do that. We'll definitely schedule you within the next few weeks and come back and, you know, and let's get into some
Thanks
great,
for having me,
you know,
guys. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation. I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
No. I'm pretty sure we enjoyed it more than you expected us to enjoy. But it was such an honor to talk with you, such an honor to speak with you, and we look forward to you coming back again, most definitely.
Take care,
All
guys.
Right.
You guys have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
You too.
God bless.
Thank you so much. Wow. Janet, what do you think?
Awesome, Michael. I had told you I'm not saying anything. But I had to say something because I had read a lot and looked at a lot of different things and just the pictures itself. Anybody want to know about all the artists? Buy that book.
I really appreciate him. So, you guys, we're going to get on out of here, and because we're at the top of the hour, I did add a couple of more minutes so we can say goodnight to you guys. We did have another topic, but we're going to get to it next week. And look forward to having Mr. Tompkins join us again soon. Janet, I guess that's about it, right?
Yeah, just buy the book. You won't be disappointed.
At all. I'm still, as I said before, you know, I find myself going back and reading the chapter I just read before because it's just, And you know what's so great, what I find myself doing, I don't know about the rest of you, is that where you have to visualize these things as you read, just like when you're reading an actual fiction or science fiction type book. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of visualize these artists and the story that he tells and everything, and the situation. What gets me is that I'm actually trying to see how that might have really looked, you know, in my mind's eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. So, again, I want to thank my co-host, Janet Davis, the one and only Mr. Tyvin Ship, and also in the chat room, we had Bringing It Boy chimed in. And the last thing that Bringing It Boy put in here said, capitalism is for everyone. The more the better. If I can fan a grip of hundreds, don't slobber over them because you wish you could. Well, if you earned it, fine. If you stole it, that's a different story. That's my prerogative, and that's just the way it is. So anyway, you guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. God bless. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next Saturday live right here on the TMGS. Take care. God bless. Peace.
God bless.